So, I apologize if you hear bells.
Oh, it don't bother me then. Oh, you mean our listeners? Yeah,
That
that's
too.
a thing. So, funny thing, I think we should release the Brian only.
I was thinking about that as like the Dead Zone the podcast solo play.
fill in the blank. It's like a Mad Libs, fill in the blank.
Yeah, I'll totally release it.
Welcome to the Dead Zone Podcast. Dead Zone is the sci-fi tabletop.
So, amusingly enough, I kind of sort of recreated. So I put all my Dreadball stuff back out
Okay.
and looking at my teams. And so obviously we're going to attempt to do this again and change everything and start with Dreadball versus Dead Zone this time around. Mostly because, yeah, I've got what, 14 teams now?
Yeah, you got a sweet eBay bundle.
Yeah, and a
That
sweet
had a
bundle.
lot.
I have quite a few teams and I suck at the game, but now I have options. I have options to look to lose with, because that's what I do. But in going through the teams that I have and kind of looking through the book and looking at the teams and so I've noticed that, like, stat-wise, most of the teams have similar stats. Some have a little bit more strength agility-wise or strength-wise or even armor-wise. So I thought it was kind of interesting how some of these teams play so differently where their stats are actually fairly average across the board.
Yeah, it's really like Dreadball is that fascinating game where like you're saying, like there's only so many different statistics that each character has and each player on the field will have. And within that there's only so much degree of variation, because I think like a three up is the best
I was gonna say that's the best you could have, right?
you can have.
You can't.
I think that's even in league play. Like, I don't think it can get better than three. And so it's just like it's between like three and six then are your number ranges, and that's all like dice rolls. So on D6s. So there's and with what, 32 teams?
Is that how many teams there actually are?
Not
That's a lot of teams.
tournament legal. Because
Well, there's only one team that's not terminal legal, right?
in that book, like in the main
Yeah.
book.
Yeah, Ronnie's Rejects, right?
Yeah, those are always rejected.
Not rejected.
But yeah, there's still like a striking amount of variety and combinations that really make the different teams distinct in fun ways. And like some of that'll even just be simply like the flavor of it. But I mean, you got like
I like the flavor. I like going through and reading like some of the team stuff.
oh yeah, that's cool.
Where you have like their little it's almost like these little blurbs that give you an idea of what characteristics I guess the team would have, not necessarily like a strategy or anything, but like a characteristic, like the Yendage being from the forest, right? How they've kind of got that forest appeal to them, and they're not really into the whole sphere thing, but they play the game, and they made it their own because they're also the ones that went into the Azorian Forest, right?
Yeah, they're the Azure Forest.
As you.
Yeah. Like, they're... that league was developed around them.
So. Yeah, which is really cool, because it gives you that... more connected feeling, I guess, maybe, when it comes to playing the game. Like, there's more to it. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what Rob and them mentioned on the open day.
Yeah.
The virtual open day. So they're coming out with... So these are... They're not necessarily league, right? It's more of a scenario-based, I guess?
Yeah, the details are still kind of slim.
Sure.
But basically the two things we really have looking forward to in Dreadbomb, mentioned on the last show, we mentioned the historical matches, which are really, I think, a really fun, fascinating space that we're going to get to see a lot of creativity in, where you basically have, like, leveled up teams doing their big match, the Super Bowls, if you will, of Dreadball.
So this would be the idea of, like, me and you playing in some league where we had gone through and ranked up so and made this many credits.
Yep.
It wasn't so that's where this game is taking place, like at the end of that, right?
Yep, exactly. And so
you don't have to go through any of the stuff.
Exactly.
You have your list, and you can actually play your version of that game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really cool.
That is really fun. And so that's one thing they're working on. And I don't know if they still have the email open, but they were taking submissions from people on their historical matches or suggestions for them. And I think it was like a 2,000 point was the number that they were going for. And so to put in perspective, like most like starting teams are usually about 1,000, and then like tournament teams are usually about 1,200. So we're jumping nice and far ahead with 2,000. I think there'll be some really cool creative matches out there.
So there's that, and then the other thing that they mentioned are kind of more of the forest thing, right? So it's going to be a new way to not necessarily a new way to play, but like new locations.
Yeah. So the big push, and this is the one where there's a lot less detail that's been hammered out.
Yeah.
But the concept would be that adding a lot more environments and different locations that be playing these not necessarily leagues. It's not limited to leagues. It's something they actually expressed interest in doing at tournaments. That it would be a tournament where you would go through these different locations. I'm suspecting that there'd probably be some environmental effects that take into consideration. Don't know if the event deck would be a factor in there. I know that's a very common one, and obviously something they've already made. I know that adds a little bit too much variability, I think, for most people taste in a tournament. But if it's a pre-established, it's always like these effects will always be in play at these maps. Some people can play around that, right? They can strategize and plan ahead. Removes a bit of that random factor, but it also then makes the matches a little bit more interesting. That's like one advantage that Dead Zone has over Dreadball as far as preface this by saying both games are just a whole lot of fun to play.
Phenomenal.
But it could be said that Dreadball, like, especially like in tournament settings, like it's very, it's always the same mat. The scoring areas are always the same. It really is, the players against the players is really kind of your factor of variability, which is fun. But you go over to Dead Zone and each mat is going to be different.
I don't think we've ever had a tournament whether it be our local tournaments or like a DepthCon or anything, where we have had even two mats that looked anywhere near the same.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's that, I think, extra flavor and extra spin that, you know, and Dead Zone works really well in a tournament setting, even with that variability, generally. Yeah. So yeah, I'm excited to see, as more details kind of come together on that, their kind of plans for these, you know, basically like galactic circuits of planets that you'll play across. And I think with that, we're also going to get to see a lot more mats come out, which will be really sweet, because right now I think there's 3 official mats, at least of the neoprene variety.
Yeah, and then there are other mats out there that
there's some custom ones that people have made that are just phenomenal. But there's only couple.
MSU one.
Yeah, you've got your MSU one, which is cool. Friend of the show, Jeff Burbage, previous episode.
Jeff Burbage made that for me. And I think it's awesome, which is cool, because it actually, I mean, it plays to like my Neobots that come in the second edition starter for Dreadball are actually painted up like
MSU's
football team. Like, to the point where I was like, I looked up older football uniforms.
Oh, nice.
To figure out, so the way they're painted, and you've seen them and played against them and kicked my butt. Yeah, thanks for rubbing that in.
I mean, you brought it up.
Yeah. But yeah, that's actually a uniform design for the MSU football team.
Mm-hmm. They look sweet.
So I had a lot of fun with that. But yeah, so I've got the board for that, and I've got that. I don't know. Maybe we could do a theme thing or something, and like have some burning couches.
Can that be one of my cheerleaders? Game
or something? Yeah, cheerleader is the burning couch. Oh boy.
Those of you outside of the area of East Lansing, Michigan, will not understand that reference.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. There might be some Ohio State fans or Wisconsin fans that actually catch that.
Yeah, maybe.
Just because, well, they've been here.
MSU campus is notorious for setting couches on fire during game day.
Still not really sure. I 17 years in Michigan, and I still can't figure out why exactly burning couches is a thing.
It's cold, I guess, in the Midwest.
Okay.
I'm saying to the guy from Alaska.
Yeah, okay. We'll just stick with that. It's cold. That's why Michigan burns couches during a football game.
Yep. But there were some other fun announcements for the Mantic Open Day, the virtual one that was shared with everybody. And among those, we got even more updates on the Matsudan and the Spectra.
Yep.
A lot more Matsudan
figures
coming out. I think they showed off some new model renders that are looking really sweet.
Yeah, for the new Matsudan.
Mm-hmm. There's going to be at least, like, is it 3 or 4 different sculpts?
It's either 3. I think it's 3.
I know one has optional weapons.
No, maybe it's 4. Yeah.
But yeah. There was also some discussion a little bit on we've kind of talked about the Spectre and the Matsudan already on a previous episode. Yes. But really exciting to see that addition to the Asterion list. But we also did get some little hints at stuff coming up for Warpath and Firefight. I know Warpath in particular, there's an errata that's on its way. They've been kind of looking at that and tightening it up a little bit.
Yeah, which it needed to be tightened up. And you know, Warpath and Firefight both are not dead games.
No.
There are people out there that are playing it. Mantic does not want to let it die, actually. I think they're going the right direction with adding some stuff to the game and updating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kind of same thing on Firefight. They are, you know, really kind of taking a good look at that. They want to make sure they do it right. So it's certainly not a forgotten entry in their list. It's something that they still feel is there's a good space for it. And so it's really just kind of a matter of them taking the time, really kind of looking at what, you know, what really worked from the first edition of that game, and probably making some tweaks to get it back up on its legs.
Yeah, which obviously with the lockdown and everything, there seems to be a huge increase in traffic on even those two pages. Mm-hmm. On the Fnatic site for Warpath and for Firefight, which is awesome to see.
Yeah.
And of course, there's tons of stuff going on Dreadball, on Dead Zone. Star Saga's got a great showing of people.
Oh, yeah.
There's a ton of people that are getting into Star Saga, which is awesome, because if you're into Star Saga, which eventually means you're going to play Dead Zone with us.
Yep. Yeah, Star Saga has really, I think, exploded in an awesome way online there. And we definitely owe a nice shout-out to Brad there, who is finished up putting together the LAS, I always pronounce that wrong, contract, the first campaign of Star Saga. He put together the solo PDFs, so to make it a lot more fun, with a lot more like a reveal of the room rather than
it's a reveal. So every time you go into a room, you click on it, and once you open that door, then you get to see what the next part of the map is. So as long as you're running off of his PDF form of it, you don't actually spoil the next room.
Mm-hmm. Which is a nice way to do it. If you are lacking like a Nexus player, or like he had it where you're playing solo, where you're doing everything. but that completes the scope of what Mantic has given him permission to put together. So I know he put a post together that basically said, you know, if you guys want more, if you liked what he had, contact Mantic and see if he can get permission to do the rest of them, because that is some awesome work that he's been putting together in that game. And really, it's always great seeing him interacting with the community. He's always there to answer questions and keeping that board game geek page alive.
And you know, one of these days we ought to get in some games with him, because we're lucky enough actually to have him actually in Michigan.
Right.
Which we have not taken advantage of that. And I really think after things open up and everything calms down in that direction, I think we need to definitely hook up with him and get some Star Saga games and maybe learn some tricks from him on different ways to play it. And then get him to play some Dead Zone.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a...
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny. So we had this very serious conversation when on the last attempt of recording this. Like, we just, like, went down a rabbit hole on this whole concept with themes.
Mm-hmm.
And it started with Dreadball, because in Dreadball you have, what did you say, 32 teams?
Something like that, yeah. I think that also includes the Mars Attack one, but I don't remember off the top of my head.
But within those teams, the two of us constantly do it. We always theme things out. Like, I have my MSU team. Didn't you do... a theme to one of your Dreadball teams.
Yeah,
And I know you did your cheerleaders.
Yep, I did. I've done a couple of themed projects. For Dreadball, I did the Neobots. I'm a big Mega Man fan, and I thought they looked a lot like Hammer Joes, so the green guys that are constantly throwing things. So I painted them all up to be like that, and with Romeo Blue being painted like Vile from Mega Man X. Like, the lore for them talks about, like, some kind of mad scientist putting them together. I'm like, that's Dr. Wily. So that was a fun project. And then the cheerleaders, I'm also a big, like, Robotech Macross fan. And, you know, much like Gundam. And so one of the big things in Macross is... singing idols, and so I painted up a bunch of my cheerleaders to be characters from the Macross franchise, which was also a lot of fun.
So presently, I think I only have two themes. I mean, of course, I say that when I actually only have four teams painted, three teams painted. I have three, and let's call this 50%. So I have 3.5 teams painted. So I have my Tron Tech painted, and I'm not, I don't think I went with a theme with them per se, but I did, actually I guess when I think about it, all three of these teams are themed.
Yeah.
Because I have my MSU team, the Neobots are MSU, the green and white, and the Void, so the Void Sirens, my wife is a huge Grease fan. So I did them very much the pink ladies. Like, I didn't do anything fancy to them, and I think they were actually the first Dreadball team I painted. So I think I might eventually get another Void Siren team just so I can repaint them.
Oh, for sure.
It's kind of one of that, like, this was the first Dreadball team I painted. I still want to keep them. But then I did my Zors in a blue and white theme, because my daughter plays volleyball, and her school colors are blue and white.
Nice.
So I guess, like, all of my stuff is themed in Dreadball. Dead Zone, not so much. I do have some themes. I mean, my entire Enforcer force for Dead Zone, Firefight, and Warpath is Cobra based.
I was gonna say, you got a couple of Dead Zone team stuff.
And then because of the challenge with you, I did my Iron Blooded Orphans Forge Father team, which I had a blast with. And my most recent one, that I think I'm more proud of that one than any other faction I've painted any of it. I did the whole story of a Reb Force.
Mm-hmm.
Getting this information off of the signals and finding out about this Ash 2020 planet and going there and trying to find an artifact. But unfortunately, as they're bringing the artifact back, it explodes. So all of a sudden, these Rebs are all transformed into Plague.
Yeah.
And I did it, and I kept that story going with the Territon that just happened to be with them as backup. Because they had a Strider that was carrying the artifact, and the Territon tried to port over, use his teleport ability to teleport over and try to rescue the pilot of the Strider. Well, unfortunately, with the explosion, it melded them together.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you have this Terra Strider. Ooh, I like that. Terra Strider.
Yeah.
I had so much fun painting that.
It's amazing, Kit Bash. It looks awesome.
And unfortunately, unfortunately for myself, because I'm so against you Rebs, and I'm always trying to stop you, I want to paint the mirrored Reb team.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be really cool to have a mirrored battle between the two Reb forces.
That would be pretty neat.
Just that mirror alternate reality.
Give them a must or goatees. That's how you know which side the evil ones are.
you can't tell. I really enjoy when you do a theme, when you paint a theme in Dreadball, so you have a very specific color set, and you take that MVP because it works with that theme.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously, because I'm not super into Dreadball right now, lore wise, I'm not really sure which specific MVP I'm talking about, but I know they're there.
Right, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, well, like, so one of my favorite MVPs is, and I can't wait to paint him, is actually the Medbot gone bad. He is so cool with the spiky. So he reminds me of Plek.
Yep.
Just that idea, and I mean, there's so many different options of MVPs that you could play, that you could add to your team and make this thematic story to your team. And I think, of course, the league play adds to that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're playing and you can, as you go through the league, as you beat me and then Brett, Dom beats me and then Dave beats me, I start to become that underdog.
Right.
Because I'm the underdog, I get a little extra money that I can put towards that MVP, but he doesn't really want to play for me, so he's going to drop the ball every time I throw it to him. That's your captain.
That's my captain.
Sorry. Wrong MVP. But, you know, and I think that because of a theme, you can run with that, and you can tell your own story.
Mm-hmm.
And create these personal worlds, I guess.
Yeah.
To give you that change of how you play the game.
Absolutely. And they can be, like, working with themes, like, it can be something from the painting level on up, right? Like, so you can play them, thematically in a from the gameplay standpoint, like, where you take a specific list. So, like, I've posted previously about some of my themed armies out there. So I've got the GCPS are set up as my Gundam team, as the Earth Federation forces. I recently finished up the Marauders to be my Zeon team from the same show. And then lastly, some of my latest projects is that I've getting ready to play a lot more Star Saga, I've painted up my Maison Labs as the Titans, also from Zeta Gundam. So the same continuous storyline, and but I painted them
so
all.
We could actually do some battles from the episodes.
That would be a lot of fun. I need to paint up some more.
Do that sliders. Custom. Do those custom scenarios and do a full attack on Zeon.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Not really sure where my iron-blooded orphans fit in that, but
well, if we model it after something like Super Robot Wars, it doesn't matter what franchise we came from.
That's true.
but the fun thing for me with the painting style of theming where I kind of takes, you know, I get inspiration from, you know, shows, anime, movies, yeah. Things like that. Like a big part of that is, you know, I do have those moments where it's just kind of like the blank canvas of like, well, I've got this model and I'm planning to paint this force. What do I need them to look like? You know, you know, there's always that lean towards like, well, you know, if I make them kind of realistic, I'm gonna have some pretty bland colors where it's just like grays and blacks and stuff like that, and it's just like that's not really fun to look at. And so I you know, get inspiration from those shows and things, and you know, take notes from people that probably are more classically trained in color theory than I am, and they come together with some crazy combinations, like
and they work.
Like that's always the fun thing about it is like the Earth Federation forces kind of have that tan khaki look to them, but then their mobile suits are like gray, you know, white, blue, red, yellows, like some really sharp contrasting colors. But it all is cohesive. The Zeon force is notably like mostly green themed, but then their suits will be you know, other greens, blues, I've got a purple one, and but they're all part of the same force, and it looks uniform in a really cool way.
Talking about themes, one of the things we do, at least have been trying to do in each of these episodes, is the unit highlight.
Yep.
For Dead Zone, which is a really, I think it's cool, and I hope our listeners are enjoying it. I hope it gives them that, well, hey, maybe I'll take this one. So it had me thinking. So we talk about Dreadball on here.
Mm-hmm.
Star Saga, not so much. I mean, we talk about Star Saga, but this leads more to a Dreadball thing for me. So we do this unit highlight to get people's attention on maybe taking a different leader than you usually do, or thinking outside the box. So with the Dreadball teams, can you rattle off the highlights of a team? What's their strengths, what their weaknesses are? Or have you read that somewhere? Or watched a video on it?
Really comes down to the different teams will have different strengths and different weaknesses. I know last time when we recorded, I kind of went off this tangent about the different play styles and how each team, like, because you had a little bit of concern about, you know,
that I suck.
Struggling.
You can say it. You can say it. I suck at Dreadball.
Struggling to achieve victory, we'll say.
But hey, I do have one victory over an Adepticon champion. I know he let me win. But I do have a victory over Jeff.
but yeah, so like one factor with that is with Dreadball, because we have so many teams, And there's just kind of there's subtle changes between them all, right? And that make them all unique. And they fit to some very different play styles. Like if you take the Marauder team, you're going to go heavy on hitting people most likely. And, you know, then you only have like basically guards and jacks to work with.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. And so, you know, you're kind of without strikers, you're less likely to play the ball as much, and so hitting your opponent into submission to clear the way for your guy is kind of a good strategy for them. It's not the only one though. There's a lot of flexibility within those different teams that really kind of let you play in different ways. There's a lot of, usually kind of falls between, like, if you're playing a bit more offensive or a bit more defensive, is where it generally lines up, but that's not a hard rule by any means. And so like, I think I kind of lost
it. So what this was leading to was the idea of us doing a kind of a team highlight.
Yeah.
So, like we do our unit highlight for Dead Zone, I want to start doing a team highlight for Dreadball. Now, conveniently, because we messed up as a duo on our last recording, yes, I know you're the tech guy, but it's both of our faults. Because I didn't say anything about doing the sound test.
But always do your sound check.
Yes, always do a sound check. So because of this, we had some extra days before we can get back together to record this. So because of that, I reached out to some friends. So I reached out to Lee. Lee's huge with Bread Doll. He's on the rules committee. Obviously, we've played with him and met him, and he's an amazing guy, and he's a coach, and he works with kids in sports, so he's got an amazing eye for strategy and how to play the game and different ways of playing with, I guess, playbooks, I guess is how you do it.
Yeah.
Play style or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So because unfortunately with no input from you, so because Adepticon I was going to actually play, I had put together a Tron Tech 29ers team. So they've kind of been on my mind as a team that I want to try. So I talked to Lee and asked Lee if he could give me a breakdown of their strengths and their weaknesses and an overview of them to help other. The idea is to do just like the unit highlight, is to give listeners and other people that chance to, oh, that's what they're all about. Instead of just doing the, oh, those are cool models. I'll play that team and realize right. I just put them. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read this if you're all right with it.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So let's see how much I can screw this up, because I suck at reading, too. Reading, playing Dreadball, it's the same thing to me. Okay, so Pitch Protocol Team Analysis, Tron Tech 29ers. Overview. The 29ers are a well-rounded team that are deceptively average on paper. However, being well-rounded means they can do a little bit of everything and are able to adapt well to the matchup at hand. Tron Tech can run around a bashy team, or try and bully a finesse team. They have all the tools for the job. Just be sure to use the right tool, the right pieces for the right ones. Strengths. One advantage of the 29ers roster is their access to all positions. This allows the team to be tailored to any style of play, adapt to any matchup, and even switch tactics mid-match. Most important, it means it's easier to get a specialist role in position to do what they do best. While being average can sometimes be a tongue-in-cheek derogatory statement, in Dreadball it can actually be an advantage. There is no obvious weakness in terms of stats to take advantage of from an opponent's perspective. They can't abuse your agility, strength, or armor. This can make the 29ers a difficult matchup to prepare for, as they could do just about anything, making them unpredictable in the hands of a crafty coach. Unpredictable. Hey, I like that. That's kind of me. True strengths of this team, though, is in their extras. Three Dreadball cards on the starting roster is strong. So three Dreadball cards. Does that mean on each of my turns I could draw up to three?
You could, if you could spend the tokens to do so, yeah.
Yeah, so, because you can only buy up on your turn, you can only spend your activations to buy a card for as many cards as you started with, right?
Yes.
Okay.
With a minimum of one.
Like minimum.
So if you didn't have any cards on your starting roster, you can always still get one.
They start with three, that's okay.
Yeah.
So anyways, continuing. So much you could do with these cards. From adding extra actions in a rush to re-rolling dice to make actions stronger. Cards are extremely valuable. Having a coaching dice is very nice too, but only having one to start means saving it for actions that wouldn't otherwise be feasible without it. Weakness. For some coaches, being well-rounded is a bit of a weakness, as the squad lacks that single-minded focus of having a specialty that they really excel at. Some matchups can take on an uphill battle if you aren't prepared. While their versatility can be a strength in the hands of an experienced coach, okay, I'm not experienced, things can spiral out of control against a veteran with a solid plan if you aren't prepared to be flexible. Strategy and tactics. While the matchup is always a factor in determining how to best defeat the opposition, it is especially so with teams that are average. Look for the opposing team's weakness and try to exploit it. High-strength teams, for example, tend to lack in other areas, and you want to build your strategy around advantages in those facets of the game. However, another approach is to try and take advantage of your Dreadball card advantage that you most likely have, flat out outworking your opponent in terms of sheer number of actions completed in a pivotal rush can turn the tide of a match. Doing more each rush can add up to a big advantage that steamrolls later in the game. Try and draw a Dreadball card each rush that you can afford it. And in most cases, choose a Dreadball card on fan checks to try and stockpile options. With a stockpile of cards, not only can you do more, but you can also do it better with rerolls. And that is thanks to Lee. Lee Montgomery. He is an awesome dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really cool to share that. Now, obviously, the two of us probably aren't going to do a breakdown nearly as well thought out as that. But we will try. Or maybe we'll reach out to Lee, Jeff, and Crazy A. To get their input and do kind of that whole thing. And let us know, guys. Let us know if that's something you guys want us to continue. I like the idea of it because it's the same thing with Unit Highlight that we do for Dead Zone. It's the different way to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they've
got a great collection of resources over at Breadball. And so we definitely recommend checking them out if you can't wait for us to get around to your teams.
And with that, I mean, shoot us an email. Find us on Facebook. Give us a shout if there's a team specifically you want to hear about next month. We could make that happen.
For sure.
Okay. So I guess that means the next thing is we just jump right into the unit highlight for Dead Zone, huh?
Yeah, might as well while we're here.
So while we were doing that, yeah, I reached out to them. And Crazy A was busy. and we know Lee has that tactics part of the game down so well. It was the perfect example. And I was like, hey, do you got a minute to talk about Dreadball? It seems like every time you say that to any of those guys, it's like immediate, what's up? What do you need? They really love the game. Which I'm getting more and more of that, I guess, fever.
Yeah, especially now you got a lot of teams.
I'd love to with having 14 teams that maybe one of them I could actually play correctly.
For our unit highlights this month, we are going to be talking about the Chief Brocker for the Forge Fathers.
So it's funny. So why did we pick the Chief Brocker? So usually on these, we pick a leader that's not used very often.
Yeah, so the Chief Brocker, he actually is, I think, might be a more common one now for newer players. But this was one that we wanted to make sure that people that had been around the block with Forge Fathers or checked them out in the past and dismissed this guy, maybe take another look now that he's been updated quite a bit. So the original kind of hurdle that he had to overcome was his little splat. It was very situational. It's called Strike It Lucky, and this is the original one from the version 2 book, is you spend a special army result, and after a friendly model picks up an item, so basically you spend your splat, you pick up this item, and you can pick up a random one. Basically, you replace that item and pick up a random one from the item pool, and you basically find that item instead. On the plus side, this could prevent booby traps from blowing up. But
yeah.
it's so situational that it turned a lot of people off. It just seemed like a really wasted... some people wrote it off as just being kind of a wasted ability there. Whereas you've got, you know, Too Stubborn to Die and Starforged Armor, two really, really good splats with, you know, on top of really strong units.
Yeah.
But since then, he has gotten quite a bit of a facelift as far as his ability goes. I think that splat in particular has changed twice, if I remember correctly. Because I think there was one where it just changed items into extra ammo.
Yeah, and now it does this nifty thing. So let's do the breakdown of the Chief Brocker.
Sure.
So he's 1-2 movement, 0 armor, 1 health. He shoots on a 5, fights on a 3, and survives on a 4. He has Tactician 1, Frenzy 1, Tough, Engineer, and Dismantle. He comes loaded with a Burst Pistol range 3, a Rapid Fire, and a Forge Hammer range fight, AP 1. He costs 26 points. He has 2 victory points. And his splat, which that's what this guy brought it up to, is Strike It Lucky. Spit an Army Special result on a command dice to give a model with a Brocker in its name the Evade and Resilient 1 abilities for the round. And he had a Recon 5. So when I made my...
And still only 26 points. And two
victory 26 points.
Points.
Yeah, he's the cheapest of the Forge Fathers for their leaders.
Mm-hmm.
By 4 points, even.
Yeah.
That's a pretty substantial build. So when I made my Iron-Blooded Forge Father list, I took the Chief Brocker, and it was back, and I took him knowing that the Strike It Lucky was a waste of my time, but it was themed. Because it was themed, I had to take the Chief Brocker. Now I'm looking at that theme list going, hey, I need to get a game back in with that guy, because I like Strike It Lucky.
But Strike It Lucky and the other abilities this he got thrown onto him, he's got Engineer and Dismantle now. Actually, I think he might have had Engineer at one point before.
He had Engineer before, but Dismantle is escalation, and Dismantle is awesome, unless you're an Asterian.
So Dismantle. Let me see if I can flip to the page real quick. Basically, it's an ability where if you're fighting a something
construct
that has the
or
construct
vehicle.
Or vehicle. Let's see if I got here. It is page 24. So this model has a knack for finding the weak spots of mechanical objects. Whenever a model deals potential damage to a model of vehicle or construct ability, add 1 to the potential damage caused. So you basically get an automatic hit.
Free hit.
If you're fighting vehicles. Or constructs. Which is awesome.
Well, not only is it awesome, but it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that I love about things like the Chief Brocker. Like, so you think engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously an engineer is going to have a little bit more strength when it comes to constructs in vehicles than, say, a regular guy. I like those. Again, it's a theme thing. So, like, making a list of all engineers would be a lot of fun. I don't know if you can do it, but it just kind of popped in my head. Because, yeah, there's no soldiers that have engineer.
No. Well, they don't all have dismantle, sadly.
Correct.
But
I think he's the only, for the Forge Fathers, he's the only one that has this mantle, I think.
I think so.
Yes.
But so like, and a lot of times like leaders do kind of fall into the category of either having a really strong splat, you know, a special ability, and kind of like sub supporting roles, and then there's a lot that have a much more combat focus. where they're often in the thick of it, and that's where their benefit lies.
And he is definitely...
He honestly fits into both categories now. Like, the biggest thing working against him in a Forge Fatherless is just his lack of armor, but he comes with tough. So he's got armor that can't be penetrated. He's, you know, fighting on three, so he's definitely melee focused. Shooting on fives isn't, you know, the bee's knees. But it's also not the end of the world.
Correct.
I've had rebel troopers shoot things.
Yeah. Yes, you have.
but like with like he just sets up for so many great combos. Like Strike It Lucky. Obviously he's got Brocker in his name, so he can have this splat apply to him. And I think I remember last time we talked, I was commenting on like, I really like a lot of these new splats that have come out that are kind of like, okay, you know, named, you know, units with this name of this.
Yeah, it gives you that built-in theme potential.
Mm-hmm.
Which
gives it a nice flavor.
Which was something that we talked about last time.
And more in depth.
More in depth, because we were talking about things like the Enforcers have the Pathfinders, and you can make a whole list based on Pathfinders. Mm-hmm. Well, in he's a perfect example, because you can make a whole list based on Brockers.
Exactly.
Now, and I know this came up in one of the Facebook chats about wishing that people like Freya had like Brocker in her name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think Living Legend necessarily needs that.
No,
just
because
they're pretty nasty as they are.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's got, you know, a weight of fire pistol.
She's a beat stick all by herself.
Burns pistol.
She's a beat stick all by herself.
Yes. But like the combos that you can get with this guy are crazy. Like, you've got a pistol that's got rapid fire, which means you have the option to pin somebody as a shoot action and then move in and hit them with your hammer. You've got the Strike It Lucky, which could give you an evade. And the resilience makes it really easy to get that evade if someone was shooting at you. So you get a free movement out of that more often than not.
He's a Strider killer.
Yeah.
He is a one-man Strider killer, and not that obvious Strider killer.
No.
Because like, you look at something like the Ripper suits.
Mm-hmm.
They have an arsenal of weapons, so they're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
By themselves. This guy's kind of that hidden, oh, you wouldn't do that. He's a little guy with no armor.
Yeah, he's a size one with no armor.
I'm going to run him in. I'm going to spend my splat so I give myself resilient ones just in case. I'm going to run in and attack your Strider. So I'm fighting on threes. I have three dice. I'm going to add another dice because I'm charging.
Mm-hmm.
I have dismantle, so I automatically get a damage as long as I successfully damage you.
You've got AP 1, so you're getting through another layer of armor.
Yeah, I mean... Really, it obviously it's based on that dice roll, but you have that opportunity with him to be a Strider killer solo. Love that.
Because really, you know, you do the math on that. You get the auto hit for dismantle. You got AP 1. That's 2. All like almost all Striders come with 3 armor. So basically, you have 1 armor to get through, and then you're doing real damage to it.
Yeah, so...
Fighting on threes? That's pretty possible when most Striders fight on fives.
And God forbid you roll a couple of eights.
Right? Frenzy 1.
8 train with this guy is going to hurt.
Mm-hmm. So, and like we said, it's not an obvious one. People aren't going to be... You know, most people that are bringing Striders are on the lookout for big guns to try and...
Missile launchers, other Striders, or... Stunt Bots or Iron Ancestors.
Yep. But otherwise, yeah. Man, you sneak this guy across the field, lickety split, like, you know, just cruising, maybe throw in some smoke to give him some cover along the way, but suddenly he's in fighting range and he is just throwing down.
Yeah.
He's a really cool unit, and I think definitely if people, you know, may have seen that it was still called Strike It Lucky, it has vastly improved from its first iteration, and so we definitely recommend if you're building a Forge Father list, take a look at this guy. Even if you're not running Brockers, you know, he's an incredible asset no matter what.
Sure is. I like him. Mm-hmm. Makes me want to get out my Forge Fathers and play him.
I was just flipping through, and I remember last time I talked a bit, to kind of jump back to the theming in Star Saga, I saw Ogun in here, and one of the other theme projects I had was to paint up a lot of my Star Saga mercs as Star
Wars. Oh yeah, characters. You went the Star Wars thing because you have one that I'm so excited about because you did Boba Fett.
Yep, I did. I did the Devil as Boba Fett. I did Elise as Shaak-Ti, so Tordruga. That one turned out kind of weird, but still all right. I had I did Kirby as BB-8. I did Dolinsky as Jyn Erso, and trying to remember everybody else. I did as Ogun. I did as Rex, the clone commander.
And you did the helmet from Rebels, which is awesome.
Yep, I added a little helmet for him, painted up in that style.
Yeah, he and got then, that Rebels look, so he's got the beard and everything, which is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... I'm really... Like, I have an Ahsoka painted for Imperial Assault, and I set them next to each other, and they look like they're from the same thing. It's, like, perfect. So I need to make Ahsoka into Star Saga.
It's been a while. So it's been a while. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure. You bought Ahsoka originally for your Rebs team, didn't you?
Maybe.
Like, you bought Ahsoka before you got Imperial Assault.
Yes.
That's what I thought.
It's an awesome character, a really cool mini.
Yeah,
and,
it really is.
And then I think lastly, I think that covers all of them except Mom. So Wrath, I did up as Darth Maul.
Yep.
So rather than having his bright green flashy colors, I got him in dark and got some metal legs going on, a big red sword. Really, like, my photos of this project don't really do him justice. I'm actually really proud with how they turned out. And I can't wait to show him off a bit more.
Yes, definitely.
But, of course, and, like, to continue with theming, like, that led me to go, man, now I really want a Forge Fathers list that's all clone troopers, you know, in that theme.
That would be a really cool color scheme, too.
And I want to do Enforcers, which I don't have a painted set for yet. I want to do them as Mandalorians.
Oh, I love it.
Specifically from Death Watch.
Yes. I would like to do the Darth Maul style Mandalorians.
Mm, yeah.
But he took over the Death Watch with the helmets and stuff. But yeah, the Enforcers, the way their armor is like perfect for Mandalorians.
They come with jump packs.
There you go, figure.
But yeah, so like that's just wanted to make sure I get that in because I'm gonna be posting pictures finally of that.
Yeah,
I haven't done that yet. But yeah, and you know, we're kind of I think coming to the end, but there was one thing that we talked about last time.
One thing
that there was many things that we talked about last time that we've since not organically come back to. In this show, but one of them that really like struck us and we started going down the rabbit hole on, and I just wanted to make sure we threw them into this pool as well was the idea of doing like secret objectives in tournament play.
Oh, yeah, the whole concept of having the like three or four secret missions that you draw at the beginning of the match, which is a throwback to first edition.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing that back in a tournament setting. So obviously this is not going to be a Adepticon type tournament. This is more of that local game shop, 6 to 10, or if you got a large group, 12, 16. I think 16 is the highest we've had.
Yeah. Usually 16 is like a nice high number.
Yeah, it's a nice, good set of players. Mm-hmm. I think it would be so much fun to have secret missions back.
Yeah. And like the idea too, like it could be something where it's randomized, or it could be it's like, okay, going into a match, you have, you know, say you're doing a four-round tournament. It's like, okay, you've got four cards. You pick which one you're doing at the beginning of the match.
Yeah.
And like, that's your kind of hidden objective. But once you do that one, you can't do it again. Like, it's something where you're always...
Yeah, so you have to pick each round, and it can never be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of that setting yourself up for, okay, I know on this mission I'm not going to be really good at objectives,
mm-hmm,
because of how I built my list. So what secret mission do I have that I could take? Okay, say your secret mission, something simple, is like kill a troop, a specialist, and a leader in one game. So there's your secret mission. So that secret mission allows me to get some extra victory points, some extra tournament points, and not worry so much about the objectives. So if I use that in this game, so then the next game I can only have one of these three. I think it'd be a really cool way to play a tournament.
I think so too. And like it really kind of toes that line. Like I do feel like it's something that could be in a full-blown tournament, like, play. The big thing would be kind of making sure it's got a nice, balanced reward thing where, you know, it doesn't tip the scales overly. I think it was something like we just kind of had that idea. We just stumbled on it because I think Rob was even talking on his Mantic open day thing where it was just like, you know, wanting to look at, you know, new ways to do tournaments.
Yeah.
And I think it spawned from the Dreadball, like different planets.
The forests and the different planets and the different ways of playing and how that can change a game completely. Yeah, I think that'd be really fun. And I think, if I believe right, we talked about, well, maybe in our next tournament here in the Lansing area, we need to do that.
Yeah.
So that's something we will definitely work on here.
Mm-hmm. Because we don't have enough projects already, but that does sound like a really fun, simple one.
Us having projects? Never.
But with that, it covers a lot of it.
Yeah, I think as a rehash, I guess.
As a round two.
As a round two of the same episode, that'll kind of clear us up for the night. Thank you again for listening. Please like and share and all that fancy. We're not very good at that part.
No, we're stuff. Not great. But
have fun doing this.
Mm-hmm. And we're coming up. So this was episode 8 for us. We're 3/4 of the way through our first run here,
which is just insane.
Yeah, it is moved along at a good clip.
Yeah, and I hope we've done Rob and Jack justice. That's what I always worry about. Like, okay, mm-hmm, I know Deads on the Podcast is now officially ours and everything, and we're doing it, but every time we do something, it's like, what would Rob and Jack think?
They're like, where's our bumpers that we made for you?
Yeah, one of these days we got to get those in there.
Yeah, I've been bad about that. Sorry, guys. You're the tech guy. That one is 100% on me. So. Yeah. But so cool. Well, with that, I've been Brian.
I'm still Rick.
And thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe out there.
And keep rolling eights.
Isn't that somebody else's?
I think it's Tyler's. But I'm Tyler, so I'm going to use it.
We know. We've met Tyler, so we can use his catchphrase.
Yeah, because that's what we do. All right.
All right, have a good night, everybody.
So I think we did it.
We did it. Yay.
Not quite as organic as last time, but, you know, things happen.
Things happen. I will put out that other episode as like a 0.5, the solo run.
don't blame us.
Blame technology.
It'll be our fill in the blank.
Yeah. This is the Mad Libs episode. You get to decide what Rick was saying.
See if it matches. It probably does.